Hello and welcome to another English edition of my podcast Helium Talk, Das Kunstgespräch. This is already the third conversation I had with my friend and fellow gallerist Jonathan Levine from the Jonathan Levine Projects in New Jersey. As promised, we are keeping up our candid talk about the business and the people and the weirdness that is called the art world. Alright, there's not much to say in this introduction really. We keep getting great feedback and emails and comments and likes, and for this episode of Helium Talk, I'm actually reading one of the mails we got and we talk about the question this artist had for us. So please send us your questions if you have any for Jonathan and me. We're definitely not finished with part 3. We're still up for more talks, so write to hello@heliumtalk.com and we see if we have some answers for you. And of course, you can also connect with us on my website heliumtalk.com or on Facebook, because we are old people, and it's facebook.com/heliumtalk, or maybe better, on Instagram. The handle here is @heliumtalk, obviously. Enough said, I hope you all enjoy this episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Helium Talk.
So how was your your opening? You've opened your first online exhibition, or?
I did. I just opened my first online exhibition yesterday, and pretty good feedback thus far. But you know, it's still early, and January is always a hard month right after the holidays, because you know people are still on vacation or they're kind of in vacation mode.
And all the money you spend on Christmas,
pretty much.
Yeah,
pretty much.
But how does it work? You're doing that on Artsy. You just, you know, sort of to explain people who don't know how an online exhibition works.
Well, there's really no difference between how we would market and promote an exhibition online and not having a physical show, and having a physical show. There is no difference in terms of how we promote and market it. The only difference is that we don't actually have the physical show. And because I was doing, you know, almost 100% of my business online for the past 5 years, it's one of the reasons I was like, well, it doesn't really make sense to have these physical shows anymore, because we're doing all our business online. And obviously it saves you an incredible amount of money. So then, you know, we our focus has always been like marketing online. So, you know, for us, it'll be like, okay, it's up on our site. We launch it, you know, there's a press release written about it. There's information written about the artist. All the images are up there with the information about them. So there's people obviously coming to the site to see what's going on. We're, you know, promoting it on Facebook. We're promoting it on Instagram.
But then you launch at a certain time, right? You just say the opening starts at...
Yeah, the opening started on Wednesday in the morning. And we made it live. And it'll be up for 1 month. And then, you know... The artist is Susanna Martin, she's an American artist, but she lives in Frankfurt, Germany.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So she's not that far from you.
Interesting. Did you discover her how?
You worked
with her before?
You know, basically I had seen her work on Facebook. I think she friended me and I friended her. I liked her work. I was like, oh, this is cool work. And somehow we got to chatting back and forth, and, she actually then applied to our competition in our second year we did it, which last year, and she got third place. Now, mind you, that there was a group of jurors. So, you know, what I chose, if I chose her for first place, and actually she was my first choice pick, you know, other, you know, the jury basically picked the winner. So she got third place. So then I was kind of like, huh. And she and I, we had met. She'd come out to visit. She is actually originally from New Jersey, like myself. So we just had some stuff in common. We connected. And I was like, I really like your work. You want to try this? She said, yeah, sure. So here we are.
And her work is, you know, how would you describe her work?
I would describe her work as figurative, but also surrealist as well. It's kind of got this fantastic quality about it, is kind of how I would. This otherworldly quality about it. It's almost like alien. It almost feels like an alien landscape, but okay. That's how for me, to me. So sure. It's weird enough. I like weird, you know. So,
and you always had artists that are, you know, sort of. I think your work is also very realistic, in the painting style. You know, so you kind of always have like artists that are what you just described as, you know, kind of fantastic and surreal and, you know, figurative.
Yeah, I mean, I typically either work with artists who are like, we call them good craftsmen, good like photorealistic painters or good figurative painters. But I'm not interested in, I've probably mentioned in the past, I'm not interested in like straightforward portraiture or just people doing still lifes. I like things that are surreal and weird in some capacity, that creates some kind of narrative that kind of takes you to another place. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. So, you know, I got really nice feedback. I'm actually quite happy with the feedback that we're getting for these talks that we're having. It's a couple of mails. We've seen them as well. I've just received one shortly before the exhibition. I think that's a nice topic we could talk about. It's also an artist who's talking about gatekeeping, you know. So his name is Russ Rittel. I'm not sure whether I pronounce his name right. And he thinks our podcasts are very insightful. And, you know, so he writes, I found your podcast with Jonathan very insightful in regard to understand the gallery model going forward. I respect your commitment to the artists you represent and the attention that you give to the craft of each individual artist in particular. This speaks volumes to your personal passion as opposed to the commercialization of the craft. That's very nice. And then he asked the big question that many artists ask, because, you know, when you come onto our websites, we basically say on the contact form here, please, artists don't apply, you know, because we have enough artists. We're not looking for new artists. So his question is, as an emerging artist and somebody who looks for this kind of, you know, representation that we've both discovered is maybe old fashioned today. When the gallery model is changing and that we are stating on our website that submissions are actually not accepted right now through websites, let me quote this: as gatekeepers, that's us, with personal preferences and your senses flooded with art, it must be difficult to consistently look at new submissions, but I wonder how someone like myself breaks through when access is denied. I think that's a very, very good question.
Well,
and one that's always asked, when I'm an artist, how do I get into your gallery? How can I get into showing with galleries in general?
Do you want me to answer that question?
I want you to answer that.
Okay.
We can, as you start, you know.
Okay. So I think it's very different than it used to be. I don't, you know, most artists don't really feel like they need us as much. They're not sure what they need us for. They think they need us for something. Even the ones who have been in the business for a while and have done it, they're not even sure what they need us for. You know, people, you know, if they can have something that's going to help them, then they're going to want it. But, you know, it's got to be reciprocal, right? So these days, you know, if I don't particularly believe in, I could talk about the old days and how it worked and why it worked that way and what you would do back in the old days. Or I could talk about now and the way to do it now, which is basically, if you're not internet savvy, you're going to have a problem. Or if you don't have someone can help you with that, you're going to have a problem. You're going to, and you know, I mean, it really kind of depends on what kind of work you're making too, because a lot of the work that you and I look at and show is if they're painters and it's correct, it's easy, it translates well online. But if you're doing more conceptual work, that's not going to be the case. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, have an Instagram account, start with that, have a Facebook account, you know, get engaged with other artists, follow other artists, start to have conversations. You know, if your work's okay or it's good, or, you know, at least it's decent, you'll start to get a following. You'll start to get exposure and you may start, you know, to have people contact you and say, how much is that? And then you can start selling it directly through Instagram. It seems to me that's mostly what artists or a lot of artists are doing these days, to my disappointment. I would say, you know, the gallerist is really in just as tough a position these days as the artist is, because we're not the gatekeepers that we used to be. If you're an emerging gallerist, forget about it. Who cares? Yeah. If you're an emerging gallerist, you know, people will be like, well, why should I come and work with you? If you're a gallerist that has some reputation because you've been around for a while, well, you still have, you know, you've got collectors, you've got an audience, you've got something. But, you know, if you're an emerging gallerist, definitely more difficult. Do you think?
Yeah, well, there's no one answer to this question. It has always been the question: how, as an artist, do you get into galleries? And of course, it's like, you know, try to show your work, you know, go to fairs and try to get exhibitions. What I always tell artists: try to get exposure. Try to get, you know, basically into small off exhibitions. Try to invite people, and these people that you invite and they like your work, you know, make them talk to others. I mean, try to find people that actually help you in your quest and promoting you. And that can be that a collector goes into one of these exhibitions and sees work that he likes and buys work from this person, and then just goes to one of our shows, for example, and says, hey, listen, you know, I found this great artist, you know, should you look at this person. But that's always just like nothing you can actually plan or really work for. I think it has gotten super difficult to get into galleries. It has always been difficult to getting into galleries, of course. But I think it's very subjective what we're showing. I mean, it's, you know, sort of coming from the passion to show, you know, what I personally believe is very good, but also combining it with a business sense. It's just, you know, it's always not, people don't really like to hear that, you know, and no matter how much passion I have for art, of course, I've been showing artists that I know will never be really, really successful, but I kind of have to mix it up with, I mean, commercially successful, have to mix it up with artists that, that actually can, where we can have a profitable show so we can afford these other exhibitions. But basically there has to be, for me, there has to be also an idea, who am I showing this work to? It's not just about the artist and if I like the artist and if the artist may be something special. My question that I ask myself is always, do I have people that I actually can show this to and that can take this further? Or will I be able to get new people for this artist? And how difficult will it be to create more exposure? Because we're not gatekeepers anymore. We're also trying to fight for recognition and being seen, you know? So, and I think right now, basically, I mean, you can always tell everyone who wants to become an artist, but be prepared. This might be, you just have to do, you know, just try to do the best you can. And that's basically it. It's basically, as an artist, you always just take a very tiny rock and you throw it in a very, very big ocean.
Yeah. I mean, to further sort of, speak on what you've just said, I mean, obviously, you know, I started this whole conversation saying, hey, Instagram. Well, yeah, you know, one of the things about being an artist, and, you know, some artists aren't very good at this, is you sort of have to network. And you really have to interact with people, and you sort of, you know, that's why you basically get some kind of an agent if you don't like to do that. That's what the gallery is supposed to represent, although, again, it's hard for the gallery to function in the way that it used to. So, like, if you were an artist who lived in New York City, or around New York City, and you're around all these galleries, or, you know, name any, you know, now because of the internet, everybody can see your work all over the world and a gallerist can find you, et cetera, and they say, hey, do you want to show in my space? And that's basically what I used to do. But, you know, one of the things is you want to find a gallery that you think your work fits in. You're not going to just send it to any random gallery. So you're right. You know, you want to get in a group show here, a group show there. You know, maybe you get a two-person show or a three-person show, maybe you get in a fair. You're trying to get eyeballs on your work until, if you're going the traditional route, you find a gallery that works for you and will represent you, or a couple galleries that you can work with that you do well with, who their collector base and their audience makes sense for your work. And, you know, you're selling. I mean, you can find a gallery that you think that fits is a great fit, and for whatever reason, the work isn't selling. But again, it's hard to talk about these things. If you spoke to me, we had this conversation 5 years ago, I could speak on this very clearly with 100% confidence. But because people are seemingly, collectors are buying directly from artists on Instagram and online, it seems to me artists' focus should be on that first, And then as they research galleries, find the gallery, right gallery that works for them, and then figure out how they want to work with the gallery system. And then if that gallery system wants to work with them, I mean, you know, it's a reciprocal, it's got to be a reciprocal relationship.
Yeah, I think every artist that actually ventures that path has to be quite aware of the fact that once he or she wants to work with the gallery and maybe goes to the gallery and maybe gets into talks and maybe start to be shown that that's a moment where you have to bring a lot of trust and loyalty to the table, because, you know, then it's not just your investment in time into Instagram, but then it's also the other side, the gallery that invests ideally a lot of money and promotion and showing and trying to get the right people, and also not to forget the knowledge and maybe the history and the past. I mean, if you as Jonathan Levine or I with my gallery here in Hamburg tell people this is a great artist I've just discovered, that has a lot of value to many people, you know. So I think just trying to get into the inner circle and try to understand how this works now, you know. And
well, I guess the thing I want to interject is, yeah, ideally that's what you want to happen. But my experience has been the past, you know, 4 years is that artists don't have an interest in keeping a loyalty. And that may be a harsh thing to say, and these people are my friends, but when they have other opportunities after you've developed them, they go, and you can't hold them down. You can't lock them down. They do whatever they want. So I think at this side, unless you're a gallerist who's got really deep pockets, you can lock someone down to a contract. Mm-hmm. It's tricky. You know, I have young artists that I come in with and who come in and they're all like, I'm going to be so loyal to you. Don't worry. And I'm like, you know what? I know you're not. You know, you may think you are. You may honestly believe you are. And I literally have these conversations with artists. I'm like, but after you've had X amount of shows and you have X amount of exposure and you have people contacting you directly, and you have other galleries contacting you, and you start to realize that, you know, you start to see the limitations of this gallery, or your ambitions are greater than the gallery, you're going to start seeing reasons to leave and find justifications to leave. It's just kind of human nature.
True.
And even if you have an artist locked down under contract and they're supposed to give you all these things, the truth is contracts, and I think you and I have discussed this before, they're very, very hard to enforce. And it also, it's like artists find out, you know, this artist broke their contract, so now I'm trying to sue them for, you know, X amount of money and work and blah, blah, blah. And truth is, it's impossible to get that. And so, I mean, quite frankly, I go back to this, you know, I keep going back to this. I can't help but think this. I think it's just a bad idea to run a gallery in the traditional way. And I don't know how we're telling artists, hey, go out and find a gallery. But I would tell a gallerist, weirdly enough, don't run a gallery. Do it differently. You know, like you can't trust anyone. Like, and not to sound like paranoid, because I trust people, but I know what the nature is of commerce when you're dealing with commerce, no matter what. And I also know that artists don't really, and it could just be people are like this as a whole, but they don't really realize how difficult and as expensive it is to do it what you do for them. And, you know, once they don't have to be locked down for you by you, it's as simple as this. You have a girlfriend and she's hot and you're a joiner and she's great and she's the best thing ever, but you get tired of her. And you're like, you know what? We're not married. She can't do anything. There's a whole bunch of other hot girls over here. They're even hotter. I'm breaking up with this guy. Or, you know, I think I got this mixed up. You know, I'm breaking up with
him. It works in both ways.
That's right. And so, but at the end of the day, the person and the artist might disagree. The people who have to put up the most money and take the most risk and all this, that, and the other thing is the gallerist.
Yeah.
And, you know, an artist is like, well, I have to spend whatever, 2 years making a show, 6 months making a show, whatever. And it shows at your gallery and it doesn't sell. And you're like, yep, it doesn't sell. Well, after X amount of consignment period, you get your work back. I can't get back the labor I put into this. I can't get back the rent I paid. I can't get back the advertisement I spent. I can't get back any of that, and I don't have the work to sell.
Yeah, but that's just, I mean, that's just like the risk of us, you know, of doing this business, of
course.
Well,
that's the point. If your artists are not going to be loyal to you, then it makes no sense to do it because you put yourself in a bad situation. And
but I think,
or else you have to run a very small business that's very streamlined and it's never going to be very profitable. And I, quite frankly, for me, as a 50-year-old man, I don't want to be living paycheck to paycheck. Just saying. I'm just talking about the realities of the economics of it, and they just don't work. So to give an artist advice on this, it's a challenging thing because I don't think the market is set up fairly.
Mm.
In a way, I just don't think it's set up fairly. I don't know that it's set up fairly for anybody. But so I think artists really need to, if I'm talking, you know, outside of being a gallerist, you know, I'd say to an artist, make sure you understand what it is you want and really understand what's at stake here. So, you know, kind of understand that, you know what, I don't really want to have that exclusiveness with the gallery. So I just want to kind of work with the gallery a little bit to get what I need from them and just use them as much as I can. I mean, in an ideal situation for an artist, they would basically just use us, and a lot of them do, knowingly and unknowingly, as a resource. They use it, and when they're done with it, they walk away from it because they're not locked into it.
Okay, but that mainly applies to, and then we're coming back to this initial question, that applies to emerging artists. That means that galleries like yours and mine, we of course will not have as much problem working for a one or two shows with an already established artist where we know there's a market where we can sell the work, you know. That is, so we're trying to minimize the risk on that part, that we're saying, okay, we'll only be friends as long as this is successful for both of us. But with you, I at least don't have this huge risk as that I have with a very new artist that
sure.
I'm trying to show, you know. So
sure.
I think basically it's I of course I don't have the complete overview of the gallery market now, but I mean, I know of course a lot about it. And I think if you are a young artist trying to get into the gallery, into the gallery system as it is, there probably still be smaller galleries that are interested in taking you on and maybe showing you, but it'd be very hard to get over the next hurdle and getting into a very profitable situation with the gallery, with the bigger gallery that actually takes you. I mean, most of the galleries that I know that have been doing fairs and stuff in the past, they're not doing that anymore. They've gotten really locally and online.
So, you know? What I would say is I don't think, I mean, to really clarify this, is I don't think artists should be thinking about their careers as like, I'm going to go approach a gallery. Yeah. I think that it's a piece of it. And I don't think there is a clear road. And I think it's individually, it's for each artist, it's different. And I would say the same thing for, you know, again, I'd say for galleries, I'm like, galleries are just screwed unless you're really rich or you want to struggle. And because, you know, back in the old days, I could say, hey, it works this way. You could build yourself up. It'll work. It'll be relatively stable. You can do okay. And, you know, if you run a solid business, you're good to your artists, you're good to your collectors, you provide good services, you run an honest, ethical, good customer service business, you're going to do okay. Take you a while to build yourself up, but it's going to ride. It can't work that way anymore. Like, again, we always compare it to the music industry, which is completely fallen apart. So, you know, record labels, forget about it, you know. That's just a longer conversation. But I think to answer an artist's question, though, if you're an emerging artist, don't look to the galleries. Look at galleries. Look at them as an avenue of one of many.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, 99% of the artists out there are never going to make a living off of what they do.
Sure.
I don't know if people really think about this. You know, artists could be really stuck in their bubble and of their world and their life. Understandably, you have to sort of be somewhat self-absorbed and really focused to make work.
Mm-hmm.
Just to do something that is not, to make work, to be a visual artist, a fine artist, a musician or a dancer or whatever, you basically have to be super focused on your vision and on not something that's necessarily applicable in the world, or not something that people actually really care that much about. So you have to be so in love with it and so passionate about it and so kind of walking down a different path than most people, you know, not getting a job as an administrator, a doctor, a plumber, whatever, you know, a computer programmer, that pays the bills so you can have a family and blah, blah, blah. Because when you're following a fine art career, 99.9% of these people are not going to have stable income. Just not going to happen. And that's just a statistic that people have to look at. So when people are that focused about making their work, and all these thousands of artists I know living these kind of unconventional, non-traditional lives, they have to be kind of focused and in a bubble. And they have a hard time coming out of that bubble and just taking a view of like the overall bigger picture landscape. And also a lot of times it's not very self-serving to like sort of look at the world and realize that you're like this sort of self-absorbed person who is not living the day-to-day life that everybody else has. And you kind of, what ends up happening sometimes is that there's sort of this entitlement, like you have to really believe in yourself. I mean, it's just sort of kind of narcissism that comes oftentimes, not always, with being an artist. And for better or for worse, there's good and bad things that come with that. So, sometimes what happens is like people forget that, you know, this is a really hard thing to do, period. And it's never going to be easy. So you're like, hey, give me the answer so I can just figure it out. Well, it's not, no matter what, even if I could sit down with you for a week and help you figure out your whole career with all my expertise and knowledge, or you could do the same thing, it doesn't mean that you're going to be successful. It's just far too difficult.
But it's of course an understandable struggle and an understandable question that when you're a young artist and you think, oh, I like what they're talking about and the gallery system and how do I get in there? And then they come to our websites and it says, well, please just don't apply. But then just to be fair, this is nothing new. This is nothing that we put on our website.
Well, we can explain.
Last weeks, we did that more or less right from the beginning.
Because let me ask you, why did you do that?
Because we find artists in a different way when we find them personally. I look for artists and I don't, you know, sort of, I hardly ever, I mean, were there any artists in the history of Jonathan, or many artists that actually applied by email and then you said, well, there's something interesting. I get in touch with them. That's super, super rare because we already see so much and we already have a responsibility towards the artist that we're working with. For me, there was always a really huge responsibility. When I'm a small gallery, and okay, that's at one point in the history of Helium Cowboy, we had like 7 employees and we were like big and going to all the fairs, despite our spaces being small. But it was like, you know, sort of we did so many exhibitions and fairs and all these things, but I still limited the amount of artists that I was working with because there's only so many artists that you can actually represent in a fair way, you know, sort of course you can take on 100 artists and then if 90 don't perform and 10 overperform, that's also fine. But that's kind of weird business, you know, for me has always been, you know, I try to get, never at the same time too many artists. So you have to tell people online, don't be disappointed. You know, you can't apply because what it means when people apply, they actually try to force you into an answer. They're writing back. There's a lot of people that actually, not every artist is very nice in his approach to galleries when you tell them, sorry, we don't reply to these mails, you know? So, and then they're just like, well, what are you doing all day? You know, you should be looking out for artists. And we say, we are, but we're not necessarily looking in our mailbox.
So can I, I'm going to talk about this. So your answer is a little different than mine. Okay. So that's my good. Answer is just that we get too many submissions.
Yeah.
And the majority of the submissions we're not interested in. So if we took submissions, we would be getting 100 submissions a week, something ridiculous, right? Yeah. And the gallery can only represent so many artists. Typically, we would maybe represent, and this is a lot, like 30 artists. A lot of galleries represent like 16, half of that, 15 artists, right?
True.
And we have a responsibility to them, and we're also invested in them. They are our business. So we can't really take on other artists. But like you said, so we're just like, listen, we're not accepting submissions. Although, in fact, early on when I did accept submissions, I ended up with two artists that way. And those two artists were Jeff Soto and Ray Caesar. But that was in the early days. And then you also get tons of submissions of work that just doesn't fit what you do. It's like, why are you sending me abstract expressionist paintings when clearly that's not what I show? But to answer these emails and people ask you for feedback, that takes time and energy. They want your expertise. Now, you wouldn't email an attorney and say, hey, can you give me free information? But there's this idea in the art world and with artists that we're supposed to give this information away for free. They've been taught that. They've been taught a lot of things, and artists are taught a lot of things by other artists and by art teachers who were artists, who in fact do not understand the business of it all and the practicalities of it. I find that when you explain it to people, they go, oh, that makes sense. I wouldn't want to do that either.
Sure.
So that's at the end of the day, if you're representing 15 artists, 30 artists, 20 artists, whatever, that's all you can represent. And, you know, unless, you know, where your person could be like, well, what if the really great thing comes through? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. What if something really does great come through? But at some point, my feeling was that if the work was that great, the way I started to work was I didn't look at submissions, because that's not how I was finding my artists. I got to a point where I was a mid-level gallerist. So the artists I was working with were already shown with younger gallerists, and they were coming up through this sort of like, you know, they had to come up through like the minor leagues. Sure. You know,
but also you got recommendations, you talk to people. And I mean, it's like, I mean, we've been exchanging names of artists and, you know, sort of, you probably should look at them. And when I talk to other gallerists, like I think the time when I've actually, you know, sort of got in touch with two of the main Helium cover artists that we've been representing for many, many years now, like Boris Hoppeck and Victor Castillo, that was when we had this partnership with Iwapop in Barcelona. And So Inigo and I, we were just talking about, he was just like showing you like this artist. And so we did like exchange shows where he showed, you know, seven of his artists in Hamburg, and we showed reverse seven of our artists over, and we talked about the artists. And that was like where we basically said, okay, let's work jointly on a few of these artists, because together we can, you know, get much more reach. And our markets are actually no competition at all. What they sell in Spain and what we sell in Germany is totally different market, you know? But yeah, if you say on your website, please, you know, send submissions, then you raise some kind of expectations that there will be somebody who replies to that, and we would have to hire a person just to do that. But what you actually been doing, I mean, with your competition, that is like a proactive approach from a gallery side to say, okay, but listen, I don't want wild submissions, but in an organized way, you know, sort of it might work. And I don't know, I've never done an art competition like this for Helium Cowboy, but how did that work for you? I mean, it's called Delusional, and you've been doing it for 2 years.
Yeah. You know, I'll speak on this, but I kind of want to go back to.
Yeah, sure.
Can we go back? I just want to respond a little bit more.
Just keep that for later. Yeah.
And I'll talk about that, because then you're gonna get me off and on track on something else. And I just want to say two other things. People have to understand there's different levels of galleries. So when you get to be a mid-level gallery like mine, there's a certain amount of income you have to create. So you can't take risk on emerging artists. It costs too much money. Mm-hmm. So that's that. But the other thing, so that people just have to understand that. And if you don't be an emerging artist, think you're going to get into a blue chip gallery, that's utterly ridiculous. That would never happen. Or it would happen like so infrequently. The thing to do for the emerging artist now, period, end of story, doesn't matter where you live. Have a great Instagram profile. Engage with it. Build up your following. If a gallery sees that, you can then contact any gallery in the world and say, hey, you're interested in showing me? That doesn't necessarily mean that gallery that you would end up working with is a good gallery, or that you're going to get along with them, or they're going to be able to sell your work, or this, that, and the other thing. At the end of the day, it takes a ton of research to find a good fit. This is a very hard business. It's not supposed to be easy. If it was easy, it wouldn't be great. I'm going to say it again. Not supposed to be easy. If it was easy, it wouldn't be great. Don't do this and think it's going to be easy. You should get your ass kicked over and over again, because it's that hard. And you shouldn't expect it to be anything but that.
I would make it even a little bit harder than just telling artists to make a good Instagram. Instagram is fair and fine. It's good for artists to see. But I think there needs to be something behind that. Because if I find an artist on Instagram that I think, oh, that's pretty good profile, I want to go to a website where I actually have a more thorough overview of what this artist is actually doing, where it's coming from. Because, you know, in these super fast Instagram times that we're living in, I may not be able to see what this artist is actually about. I may see some nice tiny pictures on my iPhone. I don't know if I agree with that. So I recommend every artist to, you know, the things for me, it's a very simple thing. Instagram is rented. It's like, it's a rental, you know, sort of when Instagram or these companies decide we do something else, you're gone.
Sure.
This is gone. If you have a website, it's your, like your own house. You build your own house. And when you make the entrance through Instagram, you say, now come to my house, come to my farm, see what I'm really about. It's like a portfolio. It doesn't have to be,
I don't know if I,
sort of like 500 pages.
I got to say, I don't know if I agree with that. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
And I can understand that. I think you're more old school than I am. because I think, you know, from what I understand, most people are, first of all, this is a really important thing I'm going to put out there. Most people are experiencing the internet and surfing online via their mobile, their phone. Most people, and it's going to become more and more that way. It's funny because I sit in front of a computer all day, but turns out statistically, based on some side work that I'm doing, that most people are looking at their phone. China, supposedly everyone does all their buying on phones. So really, that is where everyone is looking now. And they expect it in that format. And they expect it quick. And what I've seen on Instagram is that people are able to fulfill, Instagram's like TV. You can put little videos on it. You can put whatever you want on it. You can write whatever you want on it. All these artists are, they're showing their house. They're showing their life. They're showing their studio. They're showing their process. And it's actually more engaging than a website. If you have the resources to create a basic website, by all means, go ahead. It looks better. You know, as you get more professional, and you have the resources, yes. But it also, but people just don't even go and look at that stuff so much anymore.
Well, the point is not that people go directly to their website. I'm saying we were just, you know, trying, if you're an artist and you have your Instagram profile, that's nice. How far down do you scroll when you look at an Instagram profile? How much do you actually learn through the tiny pictures and the snippets of life? I'm not saying have a website where you have 1,000 hits every day. Have a website and maybe you have 2 a month from people like me, for example, because I'm just saying, if I like this, I want to know more. And I want to not necessarily directly engage with the artist, because it also creates hope immediately. If I go on an Instagram profile and I like the work of an artist, you trust me, you know, the same thing. You know, if you write a nice comment, I really like your work, then it's basically like you get submissions through your messenger function on Instagram from this artist. Oh, did you see this? Did you see this? It would be much easier for me to just, you know, sort of go to a website, take a look and say, okay, maybe this is something I want to go.
So my point here is, though,
research deeper.
If you have the resources, definitely have a website. If I look for an artist and they don't have a website up, I might think this person doesn't really, they're not as organized as they should be. They're not as pro as they should be. And what that means is, like, they're going to be less organized and difficult to work with. The more professional an artist looks, this is a secret. I'm giving away secrets here, people. So open your ears, okay? The more professional you look, the quicker you get back to people, the better you can write, the better you can send your images, the more professional, organized, and easy you are, the more professional a gallerist or a collector or someone's going to feel about you and want to work with you. Mm-hmm. This is an incredibly important thing. I mean, it's basic. Just because you're an artist doesn't mean, like, oh, I'm an artist, I'm a bohemian, I sit around with my beret and drink coffee all day and smoke cigarettes and go to bed at 4 o'clock.
Old school.
You know, but, you know, people still think that. Everybody thinks that. And they think, I'm an artist, I'm special, I should be treated special, because they're being told that they're special and they should be treated special and that they can be very difficult, but whatever they want, because they're so fucking brilliant, because their work is so great. And at the end of the day, I know a lot of artists that are fucking brilliant and they make great work. But their careers have not been what they should have been because they're too difficult to work with. They're not organized. Straight up. I would never say any names, but I know so many artists that are so amazing and they should be huge, but they're not. And then I know artists that are really mediocre that do really well because they're really professional. So that's something really to think about. How you like them apples?
No, I like that.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's good. You've gotten into a little rage there, but I think that's
to me.
That's okay. But that part of professionalism is simply very important if you want to, you know, sort of continue to go ahead. I had, you know, sort of like when what I also do sometimes, sitting down with artists that I like, maybe that I actually even show in exhibitions here, and then I often told them to go out in the world and try things out, like, you know, sort of just pack your bags and live 3 months in New York and walk around and try to find context, see how other things around you work, you know, just to get as much experience as possible, and you'll also get out of the studio. I mean, there's a lot of great talents that are in the studio and never get out, and we have to find them and pick them and help them. That's totally okay in art. But I think with the majority of artists that we're talking about now, with these millions and millions of artists that actually try to make a great Instagram profile to, you know, be found by you, that if you are really kind of, you know, sort of showing off a little bit more professionalism and showing that you're a good partner to work with, I think it's very important. I especially in these times, and that's when we come back to the point, maybe 5 years ago was different, or, you know, 10 years ago was completely different. But now it's just a time I look at artists really, really closely. Do I really want to get into this? You know, sort of, and sometimes they're like just small things that I would have, you know, overlook them because, you know, sort of, I can believe in the work and can believe I can build that. But today, this is for me, I look even closer. I much rather do 3 shows less than 1 show with
absolutely
them, with an asshole.
Absolutely. Or just, right. Absolutely. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in the market. You know, it's something else. I have very little faith in the market. And the way I'm approaching artists now is I'm working with artists that I've worked with for a long time, who still enjoy working with me and who want to work with me. And I'm working with new emerging artists that I just like their work. They're not really emerging artists. I'm working with a lot of artists I would call them more like underrepresented. They're mature. Their work is good. For whatever reason, it hasn't had a chance out in the gallery market or whatever. Like Susanna Martin is, you know, she's not, you know, she's been around for a little while. And she just hasn't had the right opportunity. And so my hope is by exposing her that people will be like, oh, this work is amazing. And, you know, something happens for her. We sell some work and maybe we have a little bit of a run together. I don't know. I have another artist I'm going to work with after this one. His name's Bradley Ursham. And, you know, he's like a guy who's around my age. He's been out there. He makes stuff. But like, again, there's only so many galleries. There's like, for every gallery, there's probably like, you know, 50,000 artists or something. I don't know what it is, but it's a lot. So there's a lot of great work that gets overlooked. I mean, listen, I started my business because artists that I was, the genre that I was into was not, these people didn't have a place to show. That was my purpose. That's still my purpose. So I may not be showing real famous artists, but I'm showing artists that I just think are make a good work that I want to share with people. And maybe it does something, maybe it doesn't.
So
I forgot where we're going with that.
But often with the points that we're discussing, that, you know, sort of coming to a point where I don't think we necessarily have to go any further. I think we will, as I said earlier, we'll not be able to find an answer that actually an artist, you know, sort of. I mean, I think what you said earlier when you explained this, people can say, okay, I understand that, but I don't think we'll get a satisfying answer out, because we know sort of we're in a situation, how can we recommend artists how to go on about their business and becoming a successful artist when we're not even sure how our businesses will look like in the next year?
That's so right.
We're in a situation where we're rethinking the whole process and the whole thing. And
I can't, if any of the artists that I work with call me and tell me what should I do. And everybody who works with me knows I'm stupidly honest. And you know, I have to be careful sometimes that I don't like give away too much, which I have done many times in my life and to my detriment. And it's just my nature, right? And, you know, they would, if they called me now, I'd just be like, yeah, man, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, that's not completely true. I would know enough about each of them and say, hey, I think this is the direction you could go in. Is this what you want to do? Is this what's going to make you happy based on where you're at in your life right now? Because that is, you know, as a gallerist, the way I function with artists has always been about who they are. You're almost like, you know, you're like their counsel. And you sort of have to be like, my whole thing was like, I want to do the best job that I can for you, what works for you and for me. And sometimes things that I would suggest for them wasn't in my best interest. Maybe on the long term, it was in my best interest because I was like, whatever, don't show with me this time. Go do this. try this other project or support them in a vision that I didn't necessarily support because I wanted them to be loyal to me and I wanted them to feel like I supported them. So that means, you know, trying to help them grow as artists, even if it's to your detriment. It's like having children in a way, I guess. I don't know. I mean, and I don't have kids, so I don't know. But, you know, I would be, you know, I'd still, you know, sit down with these artists that I work with and go like, well, what is it? They're like, well, I just want to have one show next year in Los Angeles. Or, you know what, I really want to show in Europe. Well, what are your realistic expectations about that? Well, I would like to show this kind of work and hopefully sell this much of it. Or I don't even care about selling it. I just want to have this experience and maybe I can get it paid for. It would really just depend on what it is they're looking for. And that's how I would always approach them. I'd be like, well, what are you looking to do? And what do you need from me? And does this work together in some way? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the comparison with the children. Sometimes that may sound harsh and arrogant, but you know, sort of my wife sometimes looks at me as well over the past years when I'm talking about certain situations that I came in to with artists, and then she said, "Well, yeah, but you know, just you know, I don't know, don't they know you already have two children? You know, ones." But yeah, that's a lot of support and help that we're giving out, but it's, you know, sort of basically what we started out with, same as you when you started your gallery. We wanted to show artists that weren't represented and weren't shown, similar, you know, sort of to my situation. I wanted to open a gallery that is not like other galleries, because when I was a young person and I was a young artist and I was trying to get into galleries, I was it was very difficult, it was very hard, and that was a time when we didn't even go into galleries because we were kind of not right. Fitting in. They looked at us as if we would be like parasites or something, you know. So when we came in, they said, "Oh fuck, young artists, we don't want you here. It's a gallery, you know. What do you want here? What are you doing here?" So we tried to change that with Helium Cow, and also tried to change the artists that we're trying to get in there. So of course, it's a lot of, you know, sort of trying to support this and build this up and being a consultant and being, you know, ideally a friend that helps out in certain situations. And same as what you said, sometimes you give art, you know, sort of counsel that is not necessarily beneficial for you, but that's not what the partnership is about. Sometimes it is about giving something away and giving something up and you know, sort of recommending an artist to change the gallery, go to a bigger gallery. The only thing that I always, you know, sort of wanted and where my best relationships to artists are built upon is when these artists say, "I have an issue. I want to talk about it," and not, you know, sort of just like, you know, sort of not talking about it and then just being with another gallery, because there's always solutions for everything.
Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, you know, we, you know, in all fairness, I've lost a lot of the artists that I've had be the most successful are the artists that I lose. And a lot of times people are like, "Oh, you know, how come that person not showing with you anymore?" It's like, because they left me. Because they left me because they wanted to do something else, not because I did something wrong. But you know, I also want to mention, like, this is just the nature of the game. You know, I mean, there's always this story written about, oh, the poor artist, the gallery's always screwing the artist over. Well, I don't see it that way. So, you know, but not based on my experience. But I also want to say that you and I both came into this, and people have to understand, as idealists and, like, passionate about a movement that was being underrepresented, and we built it. And I've been doing this for 25 years, half of my life. And I was extremely idealistic about it. I still kind of am, even though, you know, I've been beaten up over the years in many ways. But at the end of the day, the other thing I want to say about, you know, artists we're helping and everything, and, you know, you deal with neurosis and immaturity and self-absorption. And I mean, in all fairness, I also have some really amazingly, like, mature and great artists too. But a lot of them just, they're not. But I loved them all. I love them. I believed in them. I believed in their genius. I'm thinking about some artists right now that I used to work with that I don't work with anymore, that, you know, maybe we separated not on the best terms, but I still love them. I still think they're brilliant. Though, do I want to work with them? Not necessarily, because it doesn't work. But I still think they're really amazing because I'm in love with their creativity. I think they're geniuses. And I don't stop feeling that way about them in a lot of ways. So I just want to put that out there too.
Of course. If you're just, I mean, you're falling out with an artist, it doesn't mean you fall out with the artwork. I agree. You know, I got a couple of works in my collection as well where I don't necessarily have to see the people, or, you know, sort of, I mean, I don't mind seeing them, but I don't necessarily have to work with those people anymore. But I still really highly appreciate what they're standing for and their art and how they're going on about it. You know, it's just like sometimes there are different reasons for this, bigger galleries or misunderstandings, or I mean, it's a business in the end. You know,
that's right. It's a business.
Yeah.
You know what? You can't be, as we say, you can't get all butt hurt all the time. You have to have a thick skin. And, you know, I'm still friends with a lot of artists that did leave me, and we're still good friends. And, you know, I didn't really hold it against them. You know, I kind of was like, yeah, it's just what it is. You know, so many good things happened to me that, you know, there's a give and take to it. And that's kind of how you have to look at it. And there's a lot, so much great stuff happened to me that, like, the negative stuff, you're like, well, you can't have the good without the bad. You know, everything can't just go your way. And this was never supposed to be easy. So you have to keep it in perspective. But yeah, so that's what I would say about that.
All right, let's close this one. I'd really like to talk a little bit about, you know, sort of this competition
idea.
Yes.
Okay.
You know? So like,
let's talk about delusional.
Delusional. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That's, you know, so when I'm looking for a new artist, it's usually, as I said, you know, so I kind of find them, I see them, and I don't have that huge program such as you do, for example. So I think I like the idea a lot when you started this, this competition and just said, you know, so like, you know, I open the doors, but how did that work out for you? And, you know, I mean, you did two shows, right?
Yeah. I've done two shows. I will most likely do another one this year, maybe not during the same timeline, because I had not quite figured out exactly how I want to approach it this year. How did it work out? It's worked out pretty good, but in all, you know, honestly, it's a humongous amount of work. And so, you know, the way we get paid on it is people have to pay a submission fee, which is pretty standard, although a lot of people get very upset about that. But it's very costly.
Yeah, I mean, you could explain it, but it's very hard to explain it when you just have a website that says you have to pay us for it. I mean, it's very understandable. I have that as well. Some artists came out and said, yeah, would like to take part in Jonathan's competition, but he needs money. He wants money for it. And then I explained, yeah, he doesn't want $5,000 from you. He just wants, you know, sort of like a fee so that this can all be handled. I think you can explain that. I think this is something that will always piss people off if they have to pay for something. Everybody wants everything for free, but I mean, you have costs, you know?
Yeah, well, there's this idea that, you know, this idea again that's put out there that artists are supposed to, like, somehow they're supposed to get cheaper and free everything. Like, you know, they're poor artists. It's like, well, now how come nobody says the poor plumber or, you know, the poor garbage man or, you know, I mean, like, there. So I think there's a lot of, personally, and I'll talk about this stuff as we move forward. I think there are some stories that are put out there that, they're not true and they're actually not beneficial for anybody at the end of the day. And you have to understand this is a business and I'm not rich. And if I want to provide this opportunity for people, then it costs money and people will say, well, then you're not a real gallery or you don't have good collectors or blah, blah. It's like, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay. That's not how this works at all. And that's not the reason at all. You know, if you're going to take a risk, you don't know. You just don't know. And so it was a way to open it up to a lot of people. And I could say that a lot of these artists that did submit and got into it and we shared their work, they benefited from it greatly. You know, we gave away cash prizes. We have to pay jurors. It costs a lot of money. Last year, it cost me far more money than it cost me the year before. And I honestly didn't make any money.
But you already also like having a big exhibition where you show like a lot of artists, right? It's not just like the first three. But yeah,
it's like, you know, you're having big group shows cost money to put on, you know, there's a huge amount of expenses involved. So I think I think delusional is a really cool thing and I've met a lot of really cool artists out of it. And the one thing I like about it is I know that when those artists apply that they want to work with me as opposed to trying to convince someone to work for you. They'll work with you. You're like, oh, they're here. They have an understanding of what it is I do, or they find what I do is valuable and they want to work with me. So that's great. Mm-hmm. But you know, the delusional competition is also an experiment. And also every year I look at it and think of it differently. I did a lot of research to think about how I could turn this into basically a larger platform. You know, the idea was to create a larger platform to basically help emerging artists, but it's not going to be free. because, you know, somebody's got to pay for it. So, you know, and at the end of the day, everything you use, be it the internet, you know, Spotify, whatever service, you know, it's somehow, it's got to be somewhat profitable. You know, I'm not going to work for free and I'm not going to work for pennies either. So, you know, we're trying to figure something out that's like, that's going to be actually very accessible and usable, user-friendly, and help artists create this kind of platform that could potentially come out of Delusional. But I think it's an organic process.
But is it difficult to take part? I mean, do artists have to supply a lot of, you know, sort of, it's probably like standard information and artworks?
Yeah,
and
no, it's like we ask them to go like, hey, last year we used, what was the platform we used for submitting? Submittable we used, right?
Okay.
So we use this platform, Submittable. And so you know, you would submit through them, and we'd ask artists to submit like 1 to 3 images and information about themselves. And I went through every single submission.
How many were there? Around about?
Last year there were about 1,800, the year before there were about 1,800. So there was the same amount.
Yeah.
And I went through every single one of them and looked at them. And I do that. So the one thing I can say is every person who submits, I see their work. And a lot of times, you know, you will see some work and you'll think, oh, that's really good. It's just not right for me. But at the same time, with the jurors, because the first year I did it just by myself, the second year I did it with jurors, I'm sure that if I just juried it myself, I would have picked different artists. So that's the interesting thing about it, is that it could be different every year based on the jurors that you choose to be in it. Because they all have to, even though the jurors I picked have similar tastes to me, they still pick different stuff. And last year it was Evan Pricko, the editor of Juxtapose. It was Tara McPherson, the artist. Jeff Soto, the artist. It was the guys from Brooklyn Street Art.
Yeah.
It was Yasha Young from the Urban Nation. Did I forget somebody? I bet I did.
Oh, it's already pretty impressive.
So, you know, it's like some pretty big players in our scene to look at the work. And interestingly, you know, we all have similar but different tastes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, every year when we do it, I mean, this year, I'm thinking I'm going to have 10 different jurors. And I had this idea of creating this sort of like turning it into a platform of a hierarchy of taste that people could trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of my ideas with it. So again, it's just it's an evolving thing. And, you know, we tried a lot with ours. You know, we really shared this information a lot on Instagram and Facebook, and a lot of artists who didn't even get into the competition at all. We shared their images. We were constantly sharing work of people. So people were getting exposure. You know, we were trying to give some people, you know, a lot of people exposure through it. So have I answered your question?
Yeah, totally. I think it's one of the, when we're talking about ways of how this gallery model can change, I think this is why I was looking into this and looking into talking to you about this a little bit. It's one of when we're asking about how artists get into galleries, how the model is changing, how the business is changing. And I think that is a pretty good idea to force a different kind of decision process, you know,
and
get to, because I mean, when you're going back to the point when everybody's on Instagram, but when you have to go like and say, I have to submit this in this kind of way, and then I approach you know, I get in like these people that you just mentioned, you know, like this great jury that you had is getting in touch and taking a look at it, that is, I mean, just having these people looking at it, seeing it, you know, it's, even if you don't get into the competition, even if you don't don't win it or whatever, it might be that, for example, Yasha sees one of the artists that none of you really likes and she just follows
that's right
or her and just says, well, you know, come to Berlin, I have to do something
that's right
outside of the whole thing. So when you open it up and give people like the opportunity to get into this inner circle, I think that's a great thing.
I know for a fact that many, many artists in that competition got a lot of exposure, whether they won or not. They, both years, tons of exposure. And And that's what we were trying to do, you know, at the end of the day. And it truthfully, it's an incredible amount of work to do it properly. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure how we're approaching it moving forward this year at this point. But it's an amazing thing. It just is a lot of work. And I think there's a lot of potential there. And the idea was to create, because there's this issue, which I think we've probably discussed in the past, about there being this hierarchy of taste or hierarchy of information that's collapsed. So people don't know where to go. So, for example, in the United States, the easiest thing to talk about is, you know, our election process and how there was all this fake news getting shared on Facebook. And, you know, people will be reading some like hardcore right-wing propaganda or hardcore left-wing propaganda. And it's not a real news source, but they'll be looking at that news source as if it were the New York Times. And so it's the same thing with the art world. People don't know really where to go to really be like, I trust these people's judgment. And that's what the gallery used to be. And so now collectors are more like, well, I trust my judgment, or it's just so spread out. And it used to be like, well, if Art Inform is writing about this artist, then this is an artist to invest in. If it's on the cover of Juxtapose, you should buy that artist. Well, these things don't carry... That doesn't work that way anymore for a variety of reasons. So how do you create a real, true hierarchy of taste that people trust, they have faith in, and that a lot of opportunities come out of for the people who are participating in it? Or there's a chance.
Yeah. Do you have a public taste part in there? Like if you have the public decide?
Oh, well, that was the other thing.
We
had the people's choice as well. We allowed the public as well to vote. And the public voted and gave money away. So, and the public voted on, you know, some really good artists that I personally didn't choose either. So like, there's no telling. So we did that. We also made it open to the public so the public could just vote. I don't always trust the public vote. We do it because you could basically have an artist really get organized and tell all their friends,
sure,
vote for me. And that's the problem with public choice votes for any, be it a restaurant, a band, whatever. So that sort of kind of isn't always the best way to go. But we did offer that.
It is a way to kind of get more attention from people when you involve them into the process.
That's
as well.
Right.
I mean, it will not be in the end this deciding factor, and it cannot be the deciding factor. As you said, we did when we did the Millantor Gallery here, this big exhibition in the football stadium of St. Pauli. There was also like, they had like four places for artists or six places for artists, like wild cards where you could apply, and then they put it on Facebook, and the person that got the most likes got into the exhibitions. And thus, of course, are the people that are best in, you know, sort of engaging their friends to like the work, you know, online. So it's not necessarily the best artist that you choose for this, but you make the process a little bit more transparent, and you also get other people to engage. And that's what we also want. It's just like, you know, we kind of need, the people to come into the exhibition and see what we're actually showing. You know, that's also a thing that has gotten a little bit more difficult. I think to get an auditorium, to get people in that are totally engaged and into the art and not just the atmosphere and only just come because it's a friend. I mean, I hear this sometimes that from people and say, oh yeah, but that's not an artist for your gallery. Oh, it's totally different in your gallery. And there is no such thing as, you know, sort of as just one way to look at it. And I think when you have a competition like this, where you actually open up, because I'm pretty sure at this competition, not just artists applied that you would originally choose to say, this could be a Jonathan Levine artist. There's a lot of artists whose work you've never seen and would have probably never envisioned for your gallery, but now you get a different look into it. You
absolutely.
Know?
So, I mean, I ended up showing and working with all these different artists as a result. Like I did a solo show with this artist, Ronald Gonzalez, who like makes these sculptures out of like repurposed.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that, yeah.
I brought a lot of artists. I brought artists to two art fairs and from the competition.
Yeah.
And Julia Beeney, who is second place winner, has an online show coming up with me shortly. And I did very well with her work. And she had a lot of other opportunities showing with other galleries as a result. Josh Thiessen, who was my first place winner I have a show with this year, you know, he had some opportunities come as a result, and I brought him around the art fairs. I mean, there was lots of artists that I brought, and we sold their work, and they got more exposure, and I would have never known their work. And then I started to see these artists getting picked up on art blogs like High Fructose and Juxtapose. And so, in fact, these things were happening. There was exposure. So it's cool. That made me happy. I was like, oh, that's cool. That's great. The other thing, though, I wanted to say, you're talking about one of the things that's really interesting is I'll go online and I'll see an artist has 250,000 followers, 500,000 followers. And then I see another artist has got 20,000 followers. And I work with both these artists. And the one that's got 20,000 followers, all that artist's work sells out. The artist that's got 300,000 followers, I can barely sell the work. So that doesn't always mean something. People are always real confused about that. But
that's like what people think about, you know, sort of just they see, oh, this is super successful because there's like 100,000 followers. In the end of the day, that doesn't really mean anything in the art world necessarily. I mean, there's for example, a very good selling German artist, and German artists don't get, you know, sort of they get to 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 if they're lucky, you know, well, lucky, but if they, you know, sort of just manage to get there, that's a lot. American artists get a lot more followers and likes. And then, I mean, look at me, I would consider myself, you know, my art as Alex Diamond is rather successful, really. But I don't even look at the number that I have on Instagram, but most of my collectors are not even on Instagram, you know, sort of, they wouldn't even know what's going on there, but it's still as equally important just to be there as an address. If you have 2,000 or 500,000, I don't think that is any, I mean, there's of course a value in that, but it's not a hard value, you know, it's not a hard currency. It's a currency, but it's not a hard currency.
People think it's a currency though. And you know, not all Instagram accounts are created equal. So it's interesting because I know art, you know, the people that do well are the ones often it's because they're getting a lot of press. They're painting a lot of murals, like a lot of street artists or mm-hmm. ones that have really mastered the art of Instagram with engaging with people. And that takes an incredible amount of work though.
Yeah.
It's like a full-time job where you mm-hmm. have to have an assistant help you do it. And it's like they're running a TV show. It's kind of yeah. how I see it. So all these pictures are showing their process. They're constantly showing themselves. They're posing. Nowadays you see it mostly with women, not that you don't see it with men, pretty women who are artists posing next to their work. And not for nothing, that sells. The work might not be that great. And, you know, I'm not trying to sound sexist because that's not the case at yeah. all. But I know for a fact that if a woman is pretty and she's an artist, her work does better than if she wasn't. And I think that's lame, but it is what it is. And they clearly know it because they're doing it.
Yeah, but it's also because you get the your entrance to the whole thing is like a small image on Instagram photograph. So you have try, of course, to make your photo look really, really good. I mean, you don't want like to look at shitty photos.
How big's your phone? Because you know what? My phone's big, bro. And
still small.
Yeah, I get it pretty big. And you know what?
Then you have an artist who like all these graffiti exhibitions and events. That's a topic for one podcast alone. Ugh. And then they paint like 28 meter high skyscraper walls. And then in the end, your phone cannot be big enough for 28 meter wall, you know? So of course, but you know, getting back to the other thing, I think that's, you have to be, If you have an assistant who does social media for you as an artist, that's definitely helpful. And I know a couple of artists as well who engage really, really closely with their followers and make competitions and, you know, leave your comment yeah. here and your yeah. name here, yeah. just like the big magazines
yeah.
do.
And yeah.
And you know, I understand that they get a lot of engagement, a lot of fans and a lot of likes through that. But for an artist, like for myself, I always ask myself, do I really want to do that? Do I have time for this? I don't have time for this.
Exactly.
In the time I'm doing all these things, I can paint another work. I can make another work, which is much more important to me, you know, sort of to produce work. And I think artists forget, lose a little bit the focus on what they actually to do. You know?
The ones who do successful are the ones who are artist marketers. They're artists and marketers. And that's always been the case, truthfully.
Sure.
A lot of artists do really well because they're good marketers. I'll say one person in particular who's genius who did this is Cause.
Yeah.
He's a genius. Shepard Fairey as well. I know artists that like don't do that because they're just, that's not what they're into. I mean, it annoys, you know, I'm actually competing with artists. That's what I'm supposed to be doing, marketing. But, you know, it's, and that's what I do. But we have to market 10 different ways now and do all these different things. And it's just like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you know, your website, just so many things, artsy. And you have to be on top of these things constantly, and it's exhausting, you know? I've got mixed feelings about a lot of things. I'll say that a lot. I got mixed feelings about
that. Sure. But it only shows that, you know, sort of for like this conversation that we're holding, that there's like still a lot of other topics that we can get into, because we came here through a competition, through Delusional, and we started with your online exhibition. So I think there's a lot of topics. And while we're doing this, more people, you know, sort of kind of don't see, I'm always scribbling, you know, down ideas, things that we're talking about, and I'm writing them down in my booklet next to my computer. Not that I, you know, sort of like that we talk about it now, but so that I don't talk about it with you now, because there's so much more that we can talk about, and we kind of have to, yeah, I don't know, we have to take a look at the clock in between. I think not that it's, you know, sort of getting boring for me or boring for listeners, but we might get taken away, and then and I sit here at around midnight still, you know. I think that was a very good talk again. I mean, for us, we, but again, I hope that people do what they actually started doing with our conversations a lot, like giving us feedback, sending mails,
yes,
commenting, telling us what to talk about, maybe, you know, sort of asking questions, and you know, so maybe there's time for us to go into those things, because I think we've, you know, sort of I personally you know, sort of like the way we approach this, and you know, sort of getting the feedback that we're getting. You know, so we're working in the right direction. There seems to be a lot of interest in these topics and themes.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very cool organic process.
Sure. Yeah. And now, and then the next time we talk, you have a new headset, and we see whether that works even better. I mean, I'm not complaining about the sound, but I have to admit that in post production, I work more on our podcast than I work on the podcast that we're doing.
I want to say something here. I want to interject, but I think while we were doing this podcast, somebody came and delivered something at my front door, so it could be the new headset.
Yeah. So, is there anything you want to close out with, or
no? I just don't really want. Did we say Happy New Year the last time? No, we didn't. This is the first podcast of the new year. So Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
And not much. I'll be pushing and promoting my band. Record release comes out February 8th.
Can't wait.
So if you guys are interested, listen, Cyclone Static. Cyclone Static, bro.
I can't believe it. I mean, that's, you know, so I want to just interrupt you. I'm heavily promoting that band, and also I was privileged enough to listen to a few more songs, and I really also dig the review that you've gotten, because that describes it pretty well. But I just can't wait for the record come out, and of course, knowing you, Jonathan, the cover is also pretty good.
Oh yeah, you like that? Yeah, my friend Orion did that. Yeah, he was like this kind of well-known rock and roll.
Yeah, that's good.
Music artist.
All right, we will talk about that. I'm pretty sure we can make one podcast just about when the record is out.
Okay. I would love that. Let's do that.
All right. Okay.
All right. And then on that note, all I have to say is choose.
Choose.
My friend. Choose. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, I'll talk to you later.
Bye. Bye.
Helium Talk. Helium Talk. Helium.